Welcome to Datemares. This story is titled Tangled Up in Ivy by Lisa Johnson, Managing Editor of True. One day, I was in the midst of a downward spiral private pity party when I got the sudden strange urge to peruse the personals of the Dallas Observer. Nothing really caught my eye until there it was in glorious bold print. Ivy League grad. My heart pounding and pulse quickening, I read on with glee. It was a shorthanded bit of words, can't really remember. However, I do remember that it also included prep school grad, which quite frankly just sent me over the edge. I'm intoxicated by education, Ivy League educations. They're romantic and hallowed and wonderful and exclusive and remind me of all the movies and books I've ever read, which feature people who are lucky enough to have been afforded this privilege. Love story, Goodwill Hunting, but prep schools, oh my. The Catcher in the Rye, a separate piece. Makes me all tingly just saying their names. All those rumpled, ruffled, preppy-clad, shaggy-headed boys, some ne'er-do-well, some scholars, some day students, some boarders, shuffling across glistening lawns, fresh with fall, fallen leaves, and gold, scarlet, and orange. Names like Beowulf and Keats and Hemingway, just bubbling, dropping, no popping, out of their mouths like Jiffy Pop popcorn, their souls afire with learning. Well, this romantic scenario, it just touches my heart somehow. Especially since I went to public school. Side note, growing up, my minister's son, Clayton, went to St. Mark's, the most prestigious school in town, and I had a date with some of his friends to a few dances. When I entered the school gym, I felt like I had indeed arrived. I had the smart stamp of approval. Maybe just by breathing this same glorious air, I could score higher on my SAT. Erroneous logic, as I was a teenager, but I digress. After a few phone calls, I made contact with my Mensa-minded fellow. He had indeed gone to Princeton, yes, and did graduate work. I think he even finished at University of Chicago. A little Midwestern for my taste, but yet still up there, you know, suitably discriminating. And best of all, he had attended Choate Rosemary Hall, not just a private school, but a boarding school. And there, yes, he boarded. Then, when I thought it couldn't get any better, sizzle, sizzle, he had studied filmmaking in L.A. and had recently relocated to Dallas to work for American Airlines in some unknown capacity. As we spoke on the phone, he was energetic and glib and spoke at a fast clip. I got all wound up and started speaking fast, so fast I was almost unintelligible, like I had inhaled some helium. But somehow, during my fits and starts of sentences and dropping words like non sequitur and quid pro quo, the only Latin I know, we were able to set up a meeting place. He was living in Swingersville, a place called The Village, but just temporarily, he assured me. Corporate housing. So we decided to meet in the vestibule of the TGI Fridays in the shopping area near his place. It was called Old Town, with an E on the end, and pronounced Oldie Towny. Anyway, the die had been cast. I would finally get to see this man, the most perfect man in the universe. It was nightfall by the time I drove up to the TGI Fridays, and I could see that they did, in fact, have a little vestibule that was wooden and glassed in with small window panes. Kind of quaint. So out I got, all dressed in my work into evening finery, black, head to toe. There was no one there, so I opened the door and sat down on the little bench. Now, I must say that I'm not a fan of theme restaurants. There's nothing wrong with them. I just prefer to frequent places that don't line the walls with dark brown plastic wood. But inside, there they are, hunched over menus, waiting for you. Inappropriately friendly wait people who fling their faces into yours, blasting out the news about their PJ McHooligan special. They tend to make me a little nervous. So I was hoping we wouldn't settle here. A few people walked in, then a woman, then a man, then another man, then two women. This parade, which was nerve-wracking, went on until a little man walked in. He looked at me over his thick, rimless glasses and said, "Lisa?" "Jeremy," I said. "It's so great to finally meet you," he said. As I stood up, I realized that I just kept on going until I was looking at the top of his head. Yes, I had worn heels, but I absolutely towered ridiculously so over this man. I have always been such a big, tall dork. He had said on the phone that his height and weight were proportional after I had asked him if he worked out. He wasn't lying. I stepped back to observe my tatty friend. He had a shock of black curly hair, styled much like the top of the Citicorp building, and was wearing a coat like Inspector Gadget and floor-shine black loafers with tops that looked like a duck-bill platypus's bill with gathered stitching circling the toe. The heels were a little sloped, not like the sloped-heeled gentry I had hoped for, but just, well, the poor man needed new heels. Must have been on scholarship, I thought to myself. Then I heard it. That laugh. Ha-ha! Then again, ha-ha! Short, sharp burst, like a flock of geese had flown over. He would speak, then there it would be. Ha-ha! Ha-ha! And he would twist his lips over to one side as if he was blowing up a balloon from the corner of his mouth. Ha-ha! Nervous twitch or Tourette's? I couldn't tell, but it was definitely something, a sound, a laugh, I had never heard come out of a human ever in my entire life.
Do you want to get something to eat?
Yes, I said. We stepped outside, and, as if Mother Nature knew what was in store, a torrential rainstorm started. We ducked into his car, a cream-colored Impala station wagon. Mid-1980s, I would guess. When we got in, the rain was pounding on the windshield. Then he whipped out this passbook, the size of a Sears catalog, full of discount coupons and started flipping wildly through it.
Hope you don't think I'm cheap, huh?
Again, that disquieting, goosey, geesey laugh. Oh, don't be silly, I said. He continued to look, as I did, at all the selections. Bennigan's, Spaghetti Warehouse, some bad fondue place.
Fondue? Is that fondueable? Heh-heh!
One last short burst. I winced. He kept flipping. We finally settled on King Pao Wang, some Chinese place that was just across the street, so we didn't have to go very far. We drove about 50 feet, and we were there. But of course, we couldn't find a parking space that was near the front door, so we still had to tromp through deep puddles and were pummeled with sheets of rain. Once inside, my hair drenched, he didn't have an umbrella, and his thick glasses fogged over, the hostess greeted us. And then I saw them. Some not-so-close friends of mine, but close enough so that they knew who I was. I had face recall. At that point, a foreign force overtook my body, and I shot ahead, running literally to the table that the waitress pointed to, way ahead of Mr. Ivy League, and sat down so that those all-important, not really my friend's friends, wouldn't think I was on a date, but that he had met me there. Oh, the depths of idiotic shallowness that I can descend into.
"Wow, you're quick," he said, and sat down.
I picked up the menu, and it was so large that it completely obscured my face. I stayed back behind it for a bit, deciding, discerning, and yes, hiding, and all the while hearing a bit of muffled talking, which I would respond to, which was then followed by, "Huh-huh." I popped my head out in intermittent bursts and blurted out, "Uh-huhs," so that at least the people at other tables wouldn't think him psychotic. We finally ordered, and then did manage to have somewhat of an endurable meal. He was articulate, and his vitae was real. The honking even subsided a bit. I don't know what we talked about. I think I did all the talking and didn't say anything even remotely clever or corny, as I'm wont to do, so as not to evoke a laugh. We left, climbed into his car, and drove 50 feet back across the street to Oldie Townie. As we drove, he turned on the air so much that the windows fogged up, just like his glasses earlier. He started aggressively wiping the windshield with his sleeve and said, "Want to come over and see my digs? Ha-ha!" And just when I thought the thing had subsided, there it was.
Ha-ha!
"Sure, why not?" I said. Then seconds later, "You know, I've got a stomachache. I'm not feeling so well, so maybe I better not." He looked kind of confused. "Really, I do. I have this stomach thing. I get it sometimes. Maybe it's MSG," I said, then whispered, "I think it's gas." I had never before performed such an obvious bail, but I did. Darn it, I did. This whole exchange made me wonder, why is it that the things I make up in my mind rarely line up with reality? Why do I have such preconceived, stereotypical notions about someone when I read about him in a personal ad that doesn't have a picture? Where do these mental images come from? Moreover, why does my mind not invent more original characters when I'm fantasizing? Say, someone with a little pot roast tubby belly or who is slightly balding. What is this about for me? Certainly, the media, TV, movies, advertising, propagate these vanilla cookie-cutter people images. Not that if people are vanilla cookie-cutters, they're boring, but relying on the world as we live in,
for my excuse or reason for my imaginings is, well, weak. The bigger reason is perhaps that I toggle somewhere in my self-estimation between thinking myself pretty darn cute and then pretty darn unattractive. I guess, like most people, I have my doubts at times. So perhaps since I'm caught in this seesaw between healthy and less than optimum self-esteem, when I imagine my date, my partner, he fills in the areas where I'm lacking. I make him perfect because I am decidedly not. Maybe I need someone to complete me. I know it's that ubiquitous Jerry Maguire reference, but it works here. Maybe that's it, if I have any real explanation at all. I honestly think that our ability to fantasize, to dream, and, in this instance, our ability to manufacture images from words is what makes us each a creative being, and, well, human. But also, what it comes down to is this age-old dilemma I seem to inevitably find myself in when I meet someone. I'm intellectually, mentally, and emotionally attracted, but not physically. Or, I'm physically attracted and not anything else. Why is that? I want the inside and the outside to match. That is my wish. But finding that, well, that's another story. We parked back in front of the TGI Fridays, and I got out and went over to his side of the car to thank him. And bless his heart if he didn't ask to see me again. I said, not knowing how to say no at this point in my life, "That would be nice. Just call me. Call me. You know my number." And at that point, I gave him a concave chest hug and jumped into my car. Bye. See ya. Had fun. That night, as I waved goodbye, I looked back at him in my rearview mirror, my Ivy League dream man. He was standing there with one hand in his pocket and one in the air. And he was looking skyward, waving into the cloudy night. And waving, maybe, just maybe, to the geese.